Good morning, everyone. We're just going to do a quick talk about GStreamer and what's been happening for the last year. If you're tracking GStreamer on a daily basis, there won't be much new stuff, and you can go to Emmanuel Bassi's talk. But well, otherwise, we'll just tell you what we've been up to. Right, so who are we? I'm Tim Miller. I'm a maintainer of GStreamer and release manager. And that's Sebastian. He fixes stuff. All right, GStreamer, and just in case you're actually in the wrong talk, it's a multimedia framework. We try to do everything multimedia related, not just playback. So, you know, playback, recording, streaming. If there's anything multimedia related in there, audio, video, subtitles, and whatnot, we try to do it. What it is basically, it's not an application, it's a set of libraries which you can use in your own applications and GNOME uses. And it's pipeline-based, which means you can put multiple types of data processing components together. It's a bit like Lego, you know, you just put them together and you say, okay, go do something, and hopefully it all works. Plugin, it's all plugin-based. So we have some very minimal library API which you can use to interact with stuff. But other than that, all the core functionality, well, the important functionality is in plugins, and which means you can extend it, everyone can extend it, you can pay people to do stuff for you, and it's all very abstract. And we also wrap a lot of other APIs. We don't try to reinvent everything, but you know, if they're good codec APIs, we're quite happy to just write a plugin around them. We don't do our own codecs. And that's very low-level API and very high-level API, so you can really use whatever you like. For playback, you don't want to, you know, do your own pipelines, you just want to use Playbin, for example. For encoding, we have EncodeBin, we have editing services stuff, it almost works. We have RTSP server, you can write an RTSP server in 6 lines of code, it's quite cool. You can basically stream any pipeline you have, if it's a video camera or whatnot. And there are high-level libraries for voice chat and video chat and things like that, FastStream, Telepathy. And we also try to integrate with all kinds of other network frameworks. So, you know, if you're on other operating systems, if you're on embedded devices, if you try to do stuff on OS X or Windows, you know, we try to do that. If you know, WebKit, Clutter, all these kind of things. We try to accommodate everyone, and we try to make sure you can use GStreamer in every situation you'd want to. And especially on embedded devices, of course, as well, because you want to do video decoding and stuff on the provided hardware decoders. All right, so what are we going to talk about? We're going to tell you what we've been up to for the last year. And then what comes after that. So, just in case you hadn't noticed, what we've actually released GStreamer 1.0. 1.0 is basically that, you know, big thing we've been working on for almost 2 years. It's been a bit late, but we finally managed to release it. It's a new API version. We fixed lots of things, and I'm sure we broke some things as well. But mostly we just fixed stuff. Let me just check. All right, so we've done that, and we've also added support for new platforms, which Sebastian's going to talk about a little bit more. And of course, there are actually literally thousands of bug fixes, which we've done. And after that, yeah, more GStreamer, more features. Just a quick note about GStreamer versioning. It's quite confusing because we've actually changed our versioning scheme. So in the old days, the old GStreamer was called 0.10. Before that, we had 0.8 and 0.6, etc. But most of you weren't born then. So basically, everything that starts with 0, you can just ignore. It's the old API. It's a different library version. 1.0 is the new API. You might hear 0.11 as well, which is basically the same as 1.0. It's a development version for that. And right, so we've basically changed to a GNOME glib versioning scheme. We haven't done that before. We just basically hacked for 3 months, and then we just said, oh my god, we've done so much stuff, we should make a release, and then we froze everything for 1 month and tried to fix all the bugs, and then we made a release after 4 months or so. It didn't work so well. I mean, it worked quite all right, but it wasn't great. So we've changed the glib version scheme now, which basically means at some point we just do branch off and we just do bug fix releases, which is 1.00, and then we do 1.01, 1.02, etc. At the same time, we just continue hacking on the master branch. And at some point, we do a big new feature version, which will be called 1.2, and after that will be 1.4, etc. At the same time, all the even versions, they're stable release versions, and all the odd versions, they're development release versions. They're all backwards compatible with 1.0. And I think it works quite well. Right, so 1.0 was released in September, and we've had lots of bug fix releases since then. 9 actually, because the latest one is on the servers, but we haven't announced it yet. Later, hopefully. And the overall experience was quite good, actually. To be honest, I hadn't expected that. I thought we would release 1.0 and then it would be all right, but lots of stuff still to figure out. But it wasn't so bad, actually. That would be quite cool. And I think one of the reasons for that was that GNOME 3.6, they basically adopted it on quite short notice. There was a question last year, basically, should we release 1.0 basically now, quickly, before GNOME 3.6? So GNOME isn't stuck with the old GStreamer version, because we don't have the manpower to care about that. So if you come to us with your 10 problems, we probably say, that's all very interesting, but I don't have time for that, sorry. So it wouldn't have been great for GNOME to stick with the old version. So, but the GNOME, you guys, you were great. You basically all said, okay, let's just, take the jump and go with the new version, and everyone scrambled and ported applications and, filed bugs and fixed bugs. So it really worked out well. So it's very, very much thanks for that. And that really gave us confidence as well that our API is sound and it works well. And I think most of the applications have been ported. Most of the important ones, even Rhythmbox, I think. So, right. So, what does 1.0 actually mean? We changed the API. Lots of cleanup as you do when you do things. We generalized some content. We mostly just simplified stuff. Overall, we've been hyping the whole thing for 2 years, and of course we made it sound as well. It's revolutionary. Everything is going to change. We're going to fix everything. It's going to be so cool. All the stuff you always wanted working, it's going to work. And and then now we've got 1.0, and we're kind of having to tell you, the change isn't so big, actually. It's still very cool, but overall, it's an evolution, not a revolution, as we usually say, which means that the API is mostly, you will still recognize everything. If you're an application developer, the changes will be quite minimal. But mostly what we did was in 0.10, our API, we tried to do it very, very extensible. So you can do loads of little custom additions and hacks and tweaks to work around problems. And many people have done that. But at some point, you just hit the end of the road. And if you work on embedded devices, where performance is really important, on your desktop or laptop, if you do a couple of extra mem copies, you're probably not going to notice it too much. On an embedded device, that's the difference between stuff working and not working at all. So at some point, there was just stuff you couldn't work around anymore, you couldn't fix anymore, and we had to break API to fix that. And of course, we've learned quite a few lessons in the last 5 or 6 years, and we embedded all that. So hopefully, the new API should be stable and usable for quite some time. What does it mean for you, apart from that? Well, the thing is also the old 0.10 API. We are quite creative in making use of every obscure feature of the gobject type system, which poses a bit of a problem for bindings, especially for G-object introspection, because G-object introspection basically uses, you know, all the stuff that's common and everyone else uses. It doesn't use sort of crazy stuff that you've never heard of, which is a problem if we use that, because it means, you know, that stuff doesn't work. The 1.0 API is much more bindings friendly, or much more G-object introspection friendly, which means you can now actually use GTK3 with GStreamer applications. Because the 0.10 API you couldn't use with G-object introspection, and which means you couldn't use GTK3. Right. But in overall, all the basic concepts stayed the same. So it's, you know, pipelines, state changes, bus messages. I don't know if any of you remember the transition from 0.8 to 0.10, but it was much different. It was basically you had to rethink the way you structure your application and do stuff. That's not the case now. It should also be said that in general, the complexity hasn't increased. There is no... everything we did is sort of fairly well understood. So there's, I mean, the risk in general is not so bad. But there's lots of cool stuff, and feature-wise, we can do now, which we couldn't do before, really. I'm not going to bore you with all the little details, but so one of the things is we have much more efficient, flexible memory handling now. We can express different types of memory much better. Before in GStreamer, you just pass a pointer on the size, and then, you know, everyone can just poke at the stuff, and that didn't work so well. So now it's much more formal. You have to sort of, you know, tell us when you want to do stuff with memory, etc. And Sebastian is going to talk about that a little bit more. And the other big weakness we had was dynamic stuff. So if you have a pipeline, you want to change something in the middle, like cheese. Yeah, you have cheese, and you look at yourself in the camera, and you suddenly want to play around with little effects, and you want to pick a different effect, and you want to change all that. That probably works most of the time, but it didn't work all of the time. Or it, you know, if you want to do more complex dynamic things, you very, very quickly run into conceptual problems, because it depends basically very much on the exact plugins you have in the pipeline, if they will change themselves and adapt to the new kind of setting or not. And if it doesn't work, there's nothing you can do about it. So we've redone all that, and it should hopefully work much better. There's still a bit of work to be done, but conceptually I think it's sound, and it should be quite cool once it all works. Right, and we have support for arbitrary metadata and buffers, so you can do all kinds of fancy things, like if your face detection, you know, you can flag it as a region of interest, you know, where the face is, and all these little things. All right, and I think Sebastian is going to tell you a bit more about stuff.
No, I'm taking this one here. So what I'm going to talk about is what exactly happened in the last year. All the details, which might be a bit boring for some people, but overall it should be fine. So what we have done in the last year is we provide binary releases for GStreamer, for all the stable releases, for Windows, OS X, Android, and iOS. Because, well, on Linux it's trivial to build GStreamer yourself, but on all these platforms, developers usually just want to download binaries from the internet and then write the applications with that. By doing this, we got lots of new developers using GStreamer on all kinds of platforms doing crazy stuff. And what we have here is an automatic build system that's creating platform-specific binaries. So for Windows, you get MSI installers. For OS X, you get a framework that automatically integrates into Xcode. And basically, these developers can just use GStreamer the way they develop software on other on their platform. Currently, we just ship GStreamer and all the plugins and dependencies. But, well, what could be done in the future is, like, we could include GTK3 or Clutter. Or what you could do if you want to target, say, Windows users, you could just use our build system and generate GTK binaries from this. It's very flexible and easy to just add new stuff with that. Another big thing that Tim already mentioned is that we started development on GStreamer 1.2. That happened immediately after the 1.0 release, and our current plan is to release it in August, September, right, just in time for GNOME 3.10. Most of the stuff we did there were new features which were not included in the bug fix releases we did in the meantime, but also bigger bug fixes that well required larger changes that could cause regressions. So we wanted to test them first a bit and get some more experience with it. And well, right now we are almost ready for a release. And for you that means please start testing and report any bugs you notice. And I think if you are using GH build, you already get the very latest version. So what we also did is we added some new features to make it easier to integrate in all kinds of different hardware. For example, we now have the infrastructure to share different hardware contexts inside the pipeline between elements. So for example, it's possible to share a display connection or say a GL context or similar things in the pipeline, and then elements can just reuse this. Then we added lots of implementations and some infrastructure for hardware-specific memory. So for example, we have something to handle EGL images or DMA buffs. Well, then overall we added, we improved the support for arbitrary memory. So for example, the support for non-writable memory was improved a lot. Stuff just doesn't crash anymore if you have such memory. And we also did lots of cleanup and fixes in all these hardware-related features. So what exactly does this mean for you? Say you have a very a quite recent computer. You most probably have some GPU in there that could do decoding of some video codecs, for example, via VA API. With all the things we implemented, it's completely transparent for the application to use these APIs to use the hardware codecs, for example. So what is possible right now is, say you start WebKit, go to YouTube and watch a video. WebKit doesn't know anything about your hardware, but it automatically uses the codecs provided by your hardware. Then we added support for more features of embedded systems. For example, well, what I mentioned before, the EGL image support. And well, what we could do now is, say you're on an embedded system using, say, the Samsung Exynos chip, you can use the hardware codecs on there, decode everything directly to the GPU, apply shaders via GL to it, and then render it on the screen. And all this happens completely transparently. And for example, the decoder doesn't know that there's some GL stuff happening later. The GL stuff doesn't know that the data comes from some hardware decoder. It just happens and works out of the box. Another interesting feature we added is the Raspberry Pi support. So what is currently is possible is the usage of the hardware codecs there, which are driven through the OpenMax API. And we also did a release of GStreamer, which provides GStreamer plugins to actually use hardware that can be used via OpenMax. Other examples for this would be, for example, the NVIDIA Tegra or all kinds of Qualcomm chipsets, which can also be used via GStreamer. So on the Raspberry Pi, what we could do right now is we can decode inside. It's all right. So we can decode the video via the hardware codec. We can just draw it on the screen via GLES and EGL, and everything is happening inside the GPU on this very small $35 mini computer. So you can use it to show HD videos. People are using it to build display walls of with multiple screens. Some people even build live streaming servers with this little piece of hardware. And, well, it's almost free. The downside is it's still not a very open platform. There's lots of proprietary API. You don't have that much access to the real powerful GPU on this device. But, well, it's almost free. Then what was happening on the hardware integration side in the last months is that GSDVA API was finally released for 1.0 and, well, as I mentioned before, can be transparently used by applications. For example, it could also be used now in Totem. Then we added Exynos support via Video for Linux 2. So what seems to happen right now is that the Video for Linux API is going to be the standard Linux API to access hardware codecs, which is, well, for the video side, it's quite convenient to use, in my opinion, better than all the other alternatives. But it's also used for audio, which is still a bit awkward because, well, it's a video API. Other hardware that is supporting this right now is, for example, there's something started for Freescale chips, and others are also working on that. So in general, well, the hardware industry is quite slow. So for many different chipsets, there are not plugins for GSMA 1.0 yet, but it's happening slowly over time. Then something that happened quite recently is GSD plugins GL, which, well, as the name says, provides a set of GSMA plugins that can use OpenGL or the embedded version GLES. And, well, right now we have about four or five different plugins for different platforms that provide different GL features. So the plan is to just get rid of all of them and replace them by GSD plugins GL for the next stable release. And, well, what does it do? It allows usage of GL filters or rendering to a screen via GL transparently inside the GSMA pipeline. So you could just decode your video, apply some fancy effects with GL shaders on it, and then display it on the screen. Or you could also download the data from the GPU and encode it, send it over the network, and, well, it's all the GL knowledge is completely local, and other parts of the GSMA pipeline just don't know about it. It's also quite multi-threaded, which is a bit difficult with GL because GL is basically a single-threaded API. But we got around this in different ways, and it's working quite good now. Unfortunately, there's no integration with Coggle right now, which is the GL library used by Clutter. And I don't think this is going to happen anytime soon, because in Coggle, the design is to just hide all the GL API. You have no way to call any GL functions from there. And we would need to be able to do that to actually integrate Coggle and GC plugins GL in some way. And, well, it already runs on all platforms supported by GStreamer. So, for example, on Linux, obviously, it runs on Windows, OS X, Android. It runs almost on the Raspberry Pi. Yeah. Some other changes that happened, we now merged the Blues support into our plugin sets. Blues is an framework to use Bluetooth devices, and so, for example, it's now possible with the plugins we merged that you can send music to your Bluetooth speaker on the other side of the room or stuff like that. We also added support for all kinds of new streaming protocols like Dash, smooth streaming or HLS, which are nowadays used by many, many different streaming or video on demand services. And for example, if you want to build some kind of set-top box device for your living room, this is really useful if you want to integrate, say, with services like Netflix later. Also, what happened is that the MPEG-TS and DVB support was recently improved a lot. In the past, this was the container format that worked worse. Stuff like Seekin wasn't working properly. Playback just stopped after some time. But thanks to Edward, who's sitting there, it's now rock stable. You can actually watch. It's not rock stable. Okay. And you can just use your computer now as a DVB receiver, for example, or receive MPEG-TS streams over the internet or whatever. Then we also added initial support for DALA and VP9. DALA is the next generation codec done by the SIF Foundation, and nobody knows when it's going to be released. It's more like a research project right now, but we have support for it now. And VP9 is the successor of VP8, which is the video codec used in WebM, the Google codec, and it's going to be released sometime this year, as far as I know, and it's working quite well already, and we support it. Then many changes happened on the RTP and RTSP side, both client and server side. So as Tim mentioned, it's now possible to write an RTSP server in 6 lines of code, which is impressive in my opinion. We also added Wayland support, so once more people are switching to Wayland, you can just use GStreamer already. We can already render to Wayland surfaces. And for PTV, for the video editor, lots of changes happened in Jinonlin and GC editing services. But I want to mention them right now because there's a talk tomorrow by Jeff, which will cover all this. And last but not least, we were working on bugs. There were, how many was it? Almost 2,000 bugs we fixed in the last year. And what we didn't do is that we just closed all the 0.10 bugs. We checked if it's still applying to the new version, to 1.0, and kept them open in that case. But maybe we did some mistakes there, so it would be good if you could just check your GStreamer bugs and see if stuff still isn't working or is working now. And in general, we did lots of cleanup and polishing. Our code base is now cleaner than ever.
Right. So that was all. That's all planned for 1.2. Well, most of it anyway. So 1.2. Hopefully, it's going to come out. End of August or so. Definitely before next GNOME. We've been the new release cycle didn't really work out how we planned. We kind of at the beginning thought, okay, we're gonna do 1.0 in September and then a new, every 3 months a new major version with features. It didn't work out like that. So 1.2 now, it's been almost a year. It's definitely longer than we expected. That wasn't really how we planned it, and we're hoping to release 1.4 much sooner than that, so not another year, but we sort of, maybe we try to release this per year, every 6 months, seems fair. But we're definitely trying to limit the scope of new features for the next version, just so we manage to actually release it faster. For me, it's all very exciting, because basically we spent 2 years bike shedding over what the ABI looks like, because you try to do all that new stuff, and then you kind of commit to that ABI, and once we decide on that, it has to support everything we want to do, and it's going to be stable. So, now we can actually suddenly work on features again. So stuff is actually happening. That's quite cool. Yeah, so I mean, for the next cycle, basically what we're trying to do, we try to tie up a few more of the features we just mentioned. So all that video stuff. I mean, the stuff, I don't know if anyone actually noticed, but you know, all that stuff like the hardware accelerated video decoding on the desktop. Yeah, I mean, that should have really worked 5 years ago. It probably, you know, did to some extent if you kind of knew what to do, but that all should just work out of the box. It's ridiculous that all modern graphics cards on your laptops basically do H.264 decoding, and it's just ridiculous that that doesn't work out of the box yet. But there are reasons for that, but you know, it all comes together, and there's that moment where you just see that all the different puzzle pieces are moving towards the right places. And you know, if 1.2 isn't the one where it all comes together, 1.4 will hopefully be that one. So yes, and another thing we really should do, our documentation and tutorials, they are not very good. And there's extensive documentation. There are the design documentation is very, very low level. Then we have very high level sort of manuals. The problem is we don't have any middle kind of documentation. You know, some people just say, like, how do I do that? And we don't really have anything to answer that. So that's definitely something we need to improve on. The web, yeah, there's lots of cool stuff happening with WebKit, etc. And I think Firefox people are also integrating GStreamer stuff. And all the HTML5 stuff actually requires us to add new features to Playbin. Yeah, there are new features that you don't support yet, like you can select multiple audio streams at the same time. You can script. You have media sources. You can script media and inject it into the pipeline. All kinds of stuff. Buffering control, subtitles, you know, we need to add support for all that, and it's being worked on. 3D video, yeah, we now have all the infrastructure in place. We just sort of need to bite shed over the signaling, how exactly are we going to do it. And there was a Google Summer of Code project a while back, and some kind of plugins, but we couldn't actually integrate it because, there were technical problems. But we can actually now do all that. So hopefully we're going to figure all the details out soon, and then we can have 3D video. Well, new codecs, we already touched upon that. H.265 very soon, hopefully, as soon as we get our hands on some open source stuff or hardware decoders, we'll add support for that. VP9 is already there. Yeah, and in general, we try, you know, to enable your hardware and just make it work. Blu-ray is it's an interesting issue. Well, from the the whole copy protection stuff aside, the menu stuff is really, really hard to do because you need a virtual machine to run the code of the disk, and then you need to composite lots of HD streams. You can't really do that. Unless you've got very specialized hardware. So that's not going to happen anytime soon, I think. But the VideoLAN guys actually wrote a library which works very well. You know, you can it's like DVD read, basically. You can watch titles from the Blu-ray disc, and that's something we should definitely be able to enable very soon. So I'm going to look into that. All right, and I think we might have time for questions, if you have any. Does anyone have any questions? Does anyone have any complaints? Anything? Anything that doesn't work? No questions. All right. Well, thanks very much. And there's a GStreamer conference in Edinburgh in October, and it's co-hosted with the Embedded Linux Conf and the LinuxCon and the Automotive Summit or something. So lots of cool conferences going on in 1 week. So if you're interested, sign up, and I hope to see you there. Thanks very much.